I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world, even though there are toxic chemicals around us in consumer products and in the environment. And sometimes it seems like every time we listen to the radio or read the newspaper or watch TV, they're talking about yet another toxic chemical that is dangerous to our health. But there are many things that we can do to protect our health and the environment from toxic chemical exposures. We can remove them from our homes, remove them from our bodies, and in general, do things that support our own health instead of having our health be damaged by toxic chemicals. Today is Wednesday, June 19th, 2013. Yesterday was my birthday, so today is the first day of the next year of my life, and I'm looking forward to having a great year. Today, my guest is Zeke Freeman. He's the CEO of Bee Raw, a company that sells raw varietal honeys, I should say, and they also have a great interest in saving the bees, and you probably heard that our honeybees are actually all bees are in danger of extinction. We're going to talk about that today and what you can do. But first, I want to tell you that this is actually National Pollinator Week, according to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So this is an appropriate thing for us to be talking about. And what I didn't know is that not only do bees pollinate, but also birds, butterflies, beetles, and bats are pollinators. There's this very interesting website put together by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service called Pollinators. It's at fws.gov/pollinators. And it shows all the different kinds of animals that pollinate and how we can help protect them. Today, we're going to talk specifically about the bees. So, welcome, Zeke. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks so much, and happy birthday.
Thank you. I had a great birthday. I went out, and I had a raw, organic, vegan lunch, which was fabulous. And I'm not a vegan, but I can tell that my body is, as time goes by and I eat more raw vegetables, it actually wants more raw vegetables. So, I wouldn't even say that I'm in transition. I think that I've noticed that at different times in my life, my body needs different types of food. And right now, what my body wants to eat is raw vegetables. And I had a wonderful experience yesterday with that.
That's fantastic. So, I'm very much the same. I grew up a corn and potatoes and meat eater. And, as I've grown and learned and eaten more, the more vegetables I want on my plate and the less of the others.
That's exactly right. That's exactly how I am too. Yeah.
It makes me feel better. It really does.
It does for me too. And I'm a person who grew up on a lot of fast food and a lot of sugar. I used to eat sugar at every meal and in between. I'm embarrassed to say, but I'll say that I used to eat like only chocolate cake for dinner. But that is not the case anymore. I have been known to
eat. You should not be embarrassed about that.
I have been known to eat a whole half gallon of ice cream and a whole coconut cream pie. but not anymore.
We may have been separated at birth then, because my wife knows just not to buy ice cream, because if it's in the freezer, then I eat it, and that's just the way it goes. So
yes,
she tried getting mad at. She tried getting mad at me for years, and now she's just given up. And, there's no hope for keeping sweets in my house, because I will eat them.
Yes. Well, tell us how you got interested in doing what you do to be selling raw varietal honeys.
I'm very fortunate that I grew up on my family farm in Erie, Pennsylvania, spending summers there anyway. And was exposed forever to great vegetables and our own meat and our own corn, and so I really started my life with great food in my mouth. And um, when I went to college, I decided I wanted to go to culinary school and cook. And after that, I worked around France with a number of famous chefs and as well in New York. And when I decided to leave cooking, I knew I wanted to be completely involved in food still. And I worked for Dean and DeLuca for quite a period of time. And while at Dean and DeLuca, my job was to buy packaged foods from around the world. And I was in charge of olive oil and vinegar and tea and coffee and everything else that's in a jar, a can, or a box. And one of the things that fell under my purview, fortunately, was honey. And like olive oil and vinegar, there are many different types of honey. And that's one of the things when you work in a very high-end retailer whose focus is on the individual provenance of a product, you start getting really geeky about it. You start really getting into the individual nuances of where the coffee was grown or how the tea was processed. And the same was true with honey. And what I found is we were importing all of these great honeys from around the world, chestnut honey from Italy and lavender honey from France and Manuka honey from New Zealand. But we really didn't have a focus on American honey. And, you know, we had this one kind of local guy and he had wildflower honey and that was it. Like that's all we really had for American honey. And maybe we had, you know, another one from California. And so maybe we had two or three varietals from the U.S. And I was like, there's gotta be all these varietals all over the U.S. For as many flowers as there has to be, you know, all these American honey. And, that was the beginning of my interest in honey. And, 10 years later, here we are.
That's great. I'm so glad that you brought it home, so to speak, because America does have a lot of great resources and we should be eating, as you probably agree, as close to home as possible. I want to ask you a question because I don't know the answer to this. I noticed on your website that you have a big focus on raw, and I want you to explain later to us after the break what that means. But my most immediate question is, it doesn't say that your honeys are organic. And it's been my impression for a long time, I haven't really paid attention, and this is not a criticism, it's just a question. I have always assumed that whether honey was labeled organic or not, that I was not particularly concerned about pesticides because if there were pesticides, then it would probably kill the bees and they wouldn't be coming back to make honey. So could you just comment on that so that people can understand and I can understand more about, like, is there such thing as organic honey? What would that constitute, or should we be concerned about pesticides in honey?
Sure. So organic, as you know, just in general, is a fairly convoluted and touchy subject, right? In some places, it means a whole lot, and in some places, it doesn't mean so much, right?
Yeah.
When you're talking about organic dish soap, like, how much does that really mean to you? But, you know, in a lot of places, when it has to do with your vegetables and your fruits, it really means something important. You know, there's no question about, you know, the toxic load that you're consuming into your body. The problem with honey, generally speaking, is that there are very few places in the world where there is enough land mass that we can guarantee that bees won't pollinate somewhere where pesticides are being used. And bees will fly up to 3 miles in any direction to collect pollen and nectar. So,
I'm going to just interrupt you right there because we have to go to the break. And it sounds like you have a lot more to say, which is great. So let's just take a break there. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dad. We're here with Zeke Freeman from Bee Raw, and we're talking about bees, honeys, and what you can do to help the bees, and eat healthy sweets. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Zeke Freeman, CEO of Bee Raw, a leading brand of raw varietal honeys. So, Zeke, before the break, you were telling us about organic. Go on with that, please.
Sure. So, bees fly in 3 miles in any direction to collect nectar and pollen to make honey. And the problem is there's very few places in the world where bees can fly and do that without running into some sort of pesticide. And the USDA or USDA Organic Honey won't certify anything in the United States as of this point. So there is a little bit of Canadian organic honey, and there is some organic honey from South America, but very, very little. And so that's the reason why we don't have any actually certified organic honey, is because all of our honey is from the continental U.S. That being said, what we do is we work with beekeepers who place their bees either on wild floral source flowers, tracts of flowers that are completely wild, such as wild sage or wild raspberries. And we also work when we have a varietal that is a crop that is agriculturally grown, we try to work with beekeepers who place bees on organic crops such as organic orange blossoms. So that's what we do to try to keep the pesticide load down as much as possible and the exposure to bees to insecticides as little as possible.
That's great. So I know from past experience in other fields having to do with organic that just because it doesn't say certified organic doesn't mean that it has pesticides on it or that there's a lot of pesticides in it. I know that some, like what I was looking at when I lived in California and I was talking to California winemakers, some of them were making organic wine and still they were not certified organic because they couldn't afford the certification process or whatever it was, and that there were actually reasons why some farmers didn't want to be certified, which was a whole different story. But that didn't mean that the wine wasn't organic. And so I think, would you agree that those of us who eat honey, we really don't need to be concerned about excessive exposure to pesticides, especially if it's a honey like your honey, where care is taken to isolate where the bees are flying and, you know, putting them in particular places. I personally have never been concerned about that.
Yeah, I think that you hit it. You hit it right on the nose there. And that is, you want to be buying your honey from a reputable source, whether, you know, it's a beekeeper at your local farmer's market, whether, you know, it's a company like ours, who really focuses on the beekeeper and working with small family apiaries whose interest it is to make honey, as opposed to some of the, you know, let's just say the plastic honey bear producers, who are producing, you know, mass quantity honey. You know, you might have more of a concern there, honestly. There's just less care in the process of making honey. And so I would say that that's an important distinction to make is look for, you know, someone who is a reputable producer.
Would you talk about the difference between raw and what you're going to find in the honey bear and how typically honey is processed if you're not looking for specifically raw honey?
Sure. You know, it's the fact that the honey that is not raw it exists is really a shame because there's really no reason to put honey through any sort of processing. And the reasoning for putting honey through any processing is simply a matter of large producers believe that the consumer wants that clear, liquid, amber color that you find in the honey bear. And the only thing that processing does to is strips all of the good beneficial stuff out of the honey. They heat it up to a high temperature, which kills all the good stuff. Then they micro-filter it, which pulls out the pollen and everything that tastes good. And then they blend it, a darker honey with a lighter honey, to get a, you know, that clear amber color.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, they're stripping out everything that's good about the honey, the flavor, the health benefits, and then giving us a product that we don't really need. You know, it's really a shame that processing happens at all. So, you know, raw honey is such a simple thing. You know, it has so many good health benefits. It's such a great sweetener, because it's just low on the scale of, you know, how it affects your body. So it's just silly that raw honey is processed at all.
Well, I agree with you. And I think that this gets back to, I talk a lot on the show about industrialization and how there's an industrial mindset that says everything has to be the same. And in nature, everything is different. And so I think it's so great that you are focusing on the varietal honeys, because then we get to have those different nuances and flavors, and that we could put in the dishes that we're eating every day. And I personally have at least a half a dozen different flavors of honey. I buy a lot of my honey at, I've actually bought your honey at the natural food store, and I buy a lot of honey at, farmers markets. And so they tell me, oh, here our hives are in this location, you know, 10 miles from my house. And I really enjoy that, and I enjoy having different flavors. And you talk on your website about pairing different flavors of honey, and we can talk about that later too. But I just think that honey is such an interesting sweetener. It's a shame to take away those differences and then make it all the same flavor in the honey bear. So after the break, we're going to talk about what's going on with the bees and what is the problem and what we can do to help the honeybees survive. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lundag, and we're here with Zeke Freeman, CEO of Bee Raw. That's beeraw.com. And we'll come back and talk more about honey. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lundad, and my guest today is Zeke Freeman, CEO of Bee Raw, and his website is beeraw.com. My website is toxicfreetalkradio.com, where you can go learn about upcoming guests, and you can also listen to this and other past shows in the archive. So they're there for you anywhere in the world, 24/7. Just listen as much as you want. So Zeke, so now I'd like you to talk to us about what's going on with the honeybee crisis, or I guess it's all the bees, the colony collapse disorder, and what can we do to help save the bees?
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and plug what we're doing right now, and hopefully it will help your listeners get a very quick understanding of what they can do. We just launched the Bee Raw Save the Bees Fund. People can find out more about it at beeraw.com, /save the bees. And there are some very simple things that your listener can do. One, if they're so inclined and want to keep it simple, they can donate to the Save the Bees Fund. And we, in turn, work with institutions like the Ceres Institute, which works for research in protecting invertebrates and specifically honeybees. They can sign our pesticide-free pledge to pledge to not use pesticides and insecticides in their yard. And hopefully work with their municipalities to do the same in parks and medians, so on and so forth. And then we're also offering bee-friendly seeds, which we are selling, and proceeds from those seed sales go to the Save the Bees Fund. And planting flowers both perennials and annuals, as well as flowering trees and shrubs, are one of the easiest things we can do all over the country to really help save bees. One of the problems with both urban and agricultural sprawl is that there are less and less places where bees have good, healthy storage, forage. And nutrition is one of the things, one of the real, the cornerstones of colony collapse disorder, in addition to pesticides and things like the varroa mite. And we can talk about those things as well. But we're really trying to offer a very simple way for consumers to get answers and help in the solution by launching the Save the Bees Fund.
I really appreciate that you're doing this, because I like that you are, as a company, taking responsibility for the bees that are providing the product that you sell, as well as selling a product, that it really shows the consumer the whole cycle and connects the consumer to nature and responsibility for making sure that we continue to have the source of honey. And I just think that's an admirable thing for you to do as a business. And I totally am in support and agreement with what you're doing. I know one of the things that I often think about and talk about is the loss of habitats. And I happen to live in a place which is suburbia. I live in Florida, and it's suburbia, but I have a little piece of land. It's a very small amount of land. I think it's only a quarter acre, and it has a house on it. But I have a backyard, and I have a front yard, and I'm always thinking about how can I be making habitat, as well as doing things like growing food that I can eat. And I have a lot of birds and butterflies and bees in my yard, and I know that something that everybody can do that is listening is just go online and type in something like, what would you have them type in? Bee-friendly flowers or something. And you can find the names of the plants that grow in your area that the bees want in your area, and just plant the plants, or, you know, toss the seeds on the ground and give your local bees a chance. And just anything that you can do to help in your backyard, or if you live in a high rise in your community, helping there be green space. This is all part of our responsibility as human beings. So tell us more specifically about the pesticides that are contributing to the plight of the bees.
I'd love to. So we all know that agriculture uses pesticides and have for a very long time, right? Since the Industrial Revolution. Well, probably most specifically since post World War II. Many of the pesticides, in fact, were invented originally for the use in chemical warfare in World War II. And then post-war, there wasn't a use for them, right? And so they found other uses for them, and they began using them for pesticides. So that's kind of a pretty scary thing if you think about just in our food supply before we even start talking about bees. But, right, that's where things have been since World War II, as industrialized agriculture has grown and grown. So that's pretty scary. In the past 10 years or so, there have been some pesticides released by the large agricultural companies that are called neonicotinoids. And neonicotinoids are based on nicotine, and they affect the nervous system of the insect. And the whole idea with neonicotinoids is they're supposed to be much more human-friendly, because the half-life of nicotine is much shorter than prior pesticides and insecticides. And nicotine is not particularly bad for the human body. Unfortunately, nicotinoids, they're actually putting these, they're putting them in the seeds. So they're becoming completely endemic. So over time, you know, while these may not be affected the first time they go to a crop that it has a neonicotinoid in it, over time they actually build up this load of the chemical in their colony, in their honey, and over time it actually completely destroys the colony. So they are extremely dangerous, and they're definitely another one of the cornerstones of why the bees are having such a hard time today.
And what we can do, just to make it simple, is we should be using organic gardening methods and not use pesticides of any kind in our gardens at all. Okay, so we need to take another break. But after the break, we're going to talk about something delicious, how we can use honey in various ways, particularly raw honey, and keeping its raw characteristics. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and we're here with Zeke Freeman, CEO of Bee Raw, talking about honey. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest is Zeke Freeman, CEO of Bee Raw. His website is beeraw.com, and we've been talking about how we can save the honeybees and how to choose a good honey. And now let's talk, Zeke, about what to do with your varietal honeys or any, well, I guess varietal honeys or any combination honeys. One of the things that I have recently had my attention on, not earlier in life, I mean earlier in life, I thought when I used to eat honey out of the honey bear, I just thought of honey as being honey. And so when I started being interested in natural sweeteners, I just thought, well, you know, let's make honey cake and let's make honey cookies. And, you know, I think there's something wrong with that, because people who are transitioning out of eating sugar want to eat things that they're familiar with. But once I started understanding about raw honey, what I wanted to do was make desserts or other dishes that would preserve the health qualities, as you talked about earlier, preserve the health qualities of raw honey. And if you're buying raw honey instead of heated honey, to then cook it in something, bake it in a cookie or something, kind of defeats the purpose of it being raw. And I know you have a lot of recipes on your site that have to do with cooking honey. But I also know, because I've looked at your site, that you do talk about preserving the rawness of the honey, such as I was reading a recipe about making iced tea, and you talked about making a simple syrup of the honey by combining it with warm water, not hot water, as you usually would making a simple syrup. So
That's right. Yeah, this is my favorite part of the conversation to have, right? You know,
mine too.
as a chef and a honey lover, you know, I'd much rather be talking about this than talking about saving the bees. So I'm very excited to talk about this. And so we like to cook with honey a lot because the individual characters of honey can be brought out in so many different ways. We also try to cook with honey and offer ways to cook with honey that degrade the honey as little as possible. So we try to play a balancing act there, because, you know, one, people often don't know where to go with honey past toast and tea, right? So
yeah.
We want to give them as many opportunities to use honey as possible, because it's a great replacement sweetener no matter what, because of its low glycemic index. You know, so it's like when you do a simple thing like glazed carrots, which is a fantastic, you know, spring dish, you know, some glazed carrots and pearl onions, you know, and you replace what would have traditionally been sugar with a little bit of honey, you kind of, the profile in terms of the the sweetness and the glaze all remain the same, and you get a slightly different characteristic change, and it's more healthy for you.
I do want to say, I really want to stress this point, that even, that you know, it's not a black and white issue. It's more of gradients. Like if you're putting sugar on your glazed carrots and then you put honey on instead, that's so much better than using sugar that it's not, you know, preserving the raw qualities of the honey. Although I suppose you could cook your onions and carrots and then put the honey on at the end so that there would still, you know, it would just kind of warm up the honey and not cook
everything out of it. You just sprinkle it, you just drizzle it in the end, you know, with the liquids that are there, and it will glaze very quickly.
That would be the way to do it, and then you'd preserve
the other side of that coin is the negative effects that sugar has on the environment, right? I mean,
tremendously.
That side of the argument we're not even getting into. You know, replacing sugar with honey is beneficial both for the environment as well as your body.
Yes, and the point that I was wanting to make was that even if you did make some of these delicious recipes like honey pecan pie, where it's going to be cooking the honey at 350 degrees, it's still so much better than eating sugar. It's not as healthful as eating the raw honey because you don't have all the benefits of the raw honey because it's now cooked. But still, it's so much better than eating sugar that I'd much rather have you eat a pie or a cookie made with cooked honey than with sugar. And that's what we want to do, is we want to move in the right direction. And a first step.
I agree with that completely. And the good news is, you know, this is not like trading in some vegetarian protein for meat, right? Like this isn't a kind of like half as good substitute. That honey pecan pie recipe is awesome. I mean, that recipe is so good. It's not a trade off at all.
If you look through my recipes
and you see the cocktails we put together, some of the fish dishes, the barbecue dishes. I mean, these are not trade-offs. These are fantastic.
They are delicious. And for 3 years, I published a website where I took every natural sweetener I could find, and I made up recipes using them. And I'm bringing those recipes back. So I'll be making recipes with your honeys for sure. But what I found was that I actually preferred eating the desserts made with all these natural sweeteners, honey and maple syrup and things, because the flavors were so much better than just eating regular sugar. And I don't even like the taste of white sugar anymore. I won't eat a white sugar dessert because it just tastes like chemicals. And I love it. So anything made from honey is an improvement over eating processed food, over cooking with sugar. It's just a delight, and I can't even describe how wonderful it is because it's so wonderful. I want to point out, I'm looking at a recipe here for raspberry honey creme fraiche with a little Tuile cookie. And I've been finding that as I've been exploring raw honey and what to do with it, that a lot of times what I'm finding is to just put the honey in its raw state on top of something or mix it with something, and then it becomes a dessert. For example, I love ricotta cheese. And so I'll take ricotta cheese and just put it in a bowl, and I'll drizzle the honey on top of it and sprinkle some nuts on it or a few raspberries or whatever fruit is in season. And that's a wonderful dessert. And I've been thinking about, you know, how I can make things in a more savory version and then just drizzle the honey on top. And tell us some other ways that you think about this as a chef, about what to do with raw honey.
I have to say, one of my favorite honeys is for cooking is buckwheat honey. And buckwheat honey is, we refer to it as the Guinness of honey, right? It's like, it's black, it's dark, it's stout, it's a little bit tart and tangy, and, you know, has this molasses kind of barnyardy characteristic, mm-hmm. to it. So it's probably the honey I cook with most. And to go to your idea about the ricotta, one of my favorite things in the spring when there's fresh ricotta or really fresh goat cheese is, you know, take a nice white platter or plate, pool the buckwheat honey, which, you know, get this beautiful black and white, you know, color going on, and then, you know, to put a white goat cheese or ricotta right in the middle of it, it's just really beautiful. So it always inspires a lot of oohs and ahs when you put it on the plate, on the table, as well as it's just delicious. But in terms of cooking, buckwheat is just fantastic because it really stands up to cooking. So whether you're, you know, barbecuing with it, or I make a fantastic buckwheat honey barbecue braised short rib, which really, really just infuses, you know, the buckwheat really just infuses into the whole dish, and, you know, it's just a really rich, hearty winter dish. And to that end, I also make a miso glaze salmon, which you could probably use about any honey with. I like the buckwheat. I like some of the lighter honeys with it. But I take a little bit of miso, some beer, some honey, mix those together, and then marinate salmon or another, you know, kind of fatty fish for, you know, in half an hour to 2 hours. And then you roast it really hot, and you just get this beautiful glaze on the fish, and you get this sweet, salty, glaze that's just really enjoyable, and it's easy. I mean, just tremendously easy.
Yes, it is so easy, and you can do it like just put a bit in your smoothie or in a salad dressing, or just put it like greens, for example. Greens are so bitter, you need to have something that kind of sweetens it up, and just as we were talking about with the carrots, just right at the end, you could just add a little bit of honey and you still have those raw characteristics. See, thank you so much for being with me today. This has really been a pleasure. And again, Zeke's website is beraw.com. Go take a look. Every honey tells you the location of the apiary, the floral source, and different things you can pair with. Our time is up for today. Go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com and find out more about this show, upcoming guests, and listen to the archives. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends, and I'll be back tomorrow.